Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to head inside the film room and break down the tape. The FantasyGuru.com weekly matchup podcast is on. Here's John Hansen and Greg Cosell.
The Week 14 matchup podcast coming at you here at FantasyGuru.com. I'm John Hansen. It is Thursday, December 10th. And week 14 kicks off tonight with the Minnesota Vikings at the Arizona Cardinals. We'll break that game down and all the games on the docket here with our man Greg Cosell. First, a reminder, if you're not a subscriber to FantasyGuru.com, it's not too late to check it out because the special offer is up on the site. You can subscribe now for 2016 and get the rest of this year free. That does include playoff content. So if you're thinking about trying out daily fantasy in the playoffs, we cover all the games there and do our normal projections and the like. So check that out, fantasyguru.com. We also have our DFS Guru Excel tool that is really nice. And we had a guy last week win 30 grand using the tool. It takes our projections and maximizes the picks and the players and the suggestions based on the salary caps that are out there on Fantasy Feud, FanDuel, and DraftKings. And without any further ado, we bring in our man, Mr. Greg Cosell. He is the star of the show. Let's call it that. Let's call it what it is. Greg Cosell, good morning.
John, I'm just a character actor, really.
No. Well, it's a good character that you play.
I can't be the leading man because I don't have a face for the leading man. So I'm a character actor.
Well, you know, I've got a face for radio, so I can, I understand.
There you go. So we work well together.
We do. Let's dive into it here. Week 14, Minnesota at Arizona. It's the fantasy playoffs, Greg. I can hear it in your voice every year this time.
It's fantasy play. You know what? I got up this morning, I was in the office at 5:30 this morning, John, which I always am on Thursdays, you know, to a lot of work with the matchup show on Thursday. So I thought of that as soon as I got up this morning, and it put a little bounce in my step.
I'm surprised you didn't get in there at 4 a.m. because it is, well, the fantasy playoffs. But, five, okay, we'll accept five.
You'll live with that? I'm okay?
Yeah, it's all right. Considering I just woke up like 9 minutes ago, it's not bad. let's talk about Minnesota at Arizona. And I mean, I think we can almost throw out the Viking defense and what they've done this year, Greg, because I would argue they're going to be without, let's call it, three of their top four defensive players. And Linval Joseph doing great things against the run. Anthony Barr, who's like their joker. And also Harrison Smith at safety, also Sendejo at safety may not play, but Barr, Joseph, and Smith are out, Greg. So, I mean, I think this defense is kind of ripe for the picking.
Tough matchup. They're going to have to rush the quarterback, and they're probably going to have to do it mostly with four, some creative blitzes at times. But I think when you look at their back end, because they're really hurt up the middle, I think losing Barr and the two starting safeties is a tough go against Bruce Arians, Carson Palmer passing game that attacks at the intermediate and vertical levels.
Yeah, and I would think maybe if you're just said up the middle, I think Bruce Arians wants to push the ball down the field to Brown and Floyd for sure, but I mean it could be a little bit more Larry Fitzgerald. I mean that's his area in the middle of the field. We say it all the time now. He's kind of like their slot receiver and their tight end in Minnesota. And, you know, Bruce Arians, just for what it's worth, he's not really a guy who's going to take the pedal off the metal. If they're up 28-7 in the third quarter, I think he'll still throw the ball around.
Probably. I mean, look, every coach sort of adjusts a little bit because you do run the risk of a turnover to get the opposing team back in. But, yeah, he's not a guy who's all of a sudden going to line up with two backs and two tight ends.
He's been pretty vocal about committing to volume touches for David Johnson. Boy, what an intriguing guy going forward, given his size, given his movement and his receiving ability. You see anything out of Johnson last week? I'm not sure if you studied the tape, but just give me some thoughts on Johnson.
Yeah, I was impressed with Johnson. And as we've discussed many times, I think that this is a team that runs for the balance element, not to set up their passing game. So he's going to get carries. And he may end up being their back because ultimately I think Chris Johnson, despite some good numbers this year, I think Johnson will end up being a better fit as the lead back for this offense.
Now for the Vikings, you know, they're going to have to run the football, obviously, and stay committed to it, and that needs to be the foundation. Do you see any signs that Teddy Bridgewater, I don't think he's done it all year, if he is down 2-3 touchdowns, can play that way? I mean, that to me is scary.
We haven't really seen that. And I think they do have some weapons. I think that their pass game is somewhat limited. I think Bridgewater's throwing limitations do limit your pass game. And I think that's been evident as this season's progressed. And I know for fantasy it's killed you because as we started this season, we thought Charles Johnson, we thought Mike Wallace, we thought Kyle Rudolph. And there's been a flash here and there, but their pass game has just not been very good. And look, it's not just Teddy Bridgewater. This is an offensive line that's struggled. I mean, last week was a very good example. They were overmatched by the Seahawks up front. But Bridgewater, I think we're starting to see what I think a lot of people were somewhat concerned about when he came out of Louisville. Smart kid, gets it, savvy, all those good things, just has some throwing limitations.
How many balls has he completed further than 30 yards down the field this year?
He's only thrown 8 touchdown passes, too, which, as you know, I mean, because you're in the fantasy world, that's not very good in the NFL, in today's NFL.
Yeah, I honestly, I don't even know if I can think of one ball that, you know, he's kind of like Alex Smith in that regard, but he's not ready to play, I guess, football like Alex Smith because, well, again, you mentioned the protection issues. I do think that is a problem. I mean, there's no question about it.
It is a problem.
Yeah, in Minnesota. And by the way, with Peterson, for what it's worth, if they can keep this game close, Arizona is known as a good defense and a pretty good run defense, and we all know about Deion Buchanan, the second-round pick from a couple of years ago, doing really well. But they are a little small, undersized underneath. I mean, there is a chance that Peterson can wear them down a little bit, don't you think?
If the game plays out that way. I mean, they're going to start with Peterson without question, in my view. But we'll see how the game plays out.
Yeah, it's overall not an easy matchup. This is a very well-coached and disciplined defense. They play very well together as a team to the Cardinals. They have a lot of players in the secondary you may not have heard of, you know, like Jefferson. But they do play very well. Let's move on, Greg, to Buffalo at Philadelphia. How about this? And the Philadelphia Eagles pull out the victory. But did you see anything offensively from Philly that leads you to believe, oh, okay, now we're trending upward? I certainly did not last week, despite their win.
No, I would agree with you. I think for the most part, they had some sustainability to the run game. They stayed with it. Obviously, they were down 14-0, but they stayed with the run, and then they got ahead in the second half based on special teams and defense and were able to stay with the run game, and they showed some sustainability. The pass game is still it's a tough pass game to watch. There's no shot play element to this pass game. They don't attack really vertically or down the field. I think they tried a couple of things this week. I saw a couple of route concepts, but they don't really execute them, and they don't throw the ball down the field. So they're a very condensed pass game. They're a team that's almost built in today's NFL to have to go 12, 13 plays to score, which theoretically is what the Chip Kelly offense is, but I think in the NFL you do have to try at some point to push it down the field by design, and they don't do that.
If Ryan Matthews is cleared to play, looks like he's on track to do that. He returned to practice early in the week. He did some work yesterday. Being in the Philadelphia area, it seems like he's closing in on the return. I think we've been saying this all year, Greg, even in the preseason, that he is their best option. They should probably go with their best.
Well, that's going to be the most fascinating element for this week. And again, I'm sure that a lot of people this year have probably soured on DeMarco Murray based on what he's done this year. But Murray played 14 snaps last week. And now if Matthews is healthy, based on the production Barner gave them last week, we know about Sproles, who played 35 snaps. Does Murray get snaps this week? I mean, that's – how are you viewing that as you're in your projection for this week?
Well, you just have to. I mean, that's when it comes down to a guess, because you know it's probably performance dependent in terms of how he does. So that's
right.
Impossible. You know, so that's impossible. So what you have to do is, you know, again, it's a guess. It's unfortunate. So as it stands right now, I have Murray with 14 carries, which is probably a little too generous, and that needs to be adjusted if Matthews is cleared to play. You know, right now I have it kind of split down the middle almost, you know, divided up. Murray with 14, Sproles with 8, Matthews with 9. But again, that's a fluid situation pending the official status of Murray, but of Matthews. But again, that's a guess. You know, you have to handicap a situation and say, well, Murray's not the lead back, so we can't give him 20 carries or 19 carries.
Right.
So, yeah, it's unfortunate. This Bill D, you know, they what are your thoughts on this Bill D? And just as a general thought, you know, they're going to be without Stephon Gilmore. That's number one.
Yeah, they haven't blitzed overall as much this year as many thought. In fact, until this past week, the previous 4 weeks, they blitzed at a low percentage relative to NFL standards. So they've played a little more by Rex Ryan standards, a little more conservatively. Gilmore's loss, I think, will be a factor. I imagine it'll be Leotis McKelvin taking his spot on the outside. You know, I think it's been a solid defense, but it has not been, I think, the kind of defense many might have expected. You know, a real aggressive defense with shutdown elements. It hasn't really been that kind of defense.
Yeah, and they lost Kyle Williams inside,
yep.
And that's a big loss. They are giving up 4.8 yards a carry to running backs the last 4 weeks. And that's what Philly does, and it's almost impossible to handicap their passing game at this point. No one really stepping up, by the way. It's totally been a lost year for Nelson Aguilar. I mean, it's week 14, and he's done nothing. Let's talk about Buffalo. And, you know, Tyrod Taylor – we talked about this off the air, but it just seems like it's a very small adjustment and improvement that he's made over the last couple of weeks, because just like 3 weeks ago, Greg, I'm trying to handicap the Bills, and I just felt like Tyrod Taylor was showing an inability to get the ball to Sammy Watkins down the field. But the last couple of weeks, he's made some really nice downfield throws. But as we talked about, those look great, and those pad the stats, but he's still throwing it fewer than 30 times, and they probably want him to throw it like 22 times. So if they don't connect, he's going to be limited in terms of the numbers.
Right. And I think that's why you have to be a little bit careful. I mean, I think he's a good deep ball thrower. I think he throws with good trajectory and touch. They really have no intermediate and vertical pass game other than a few deep balls to Watkins. There's very little in the way of route concepts. So if he doesn't connect, people who are focused on that for fantasy are going to be disappointed. Now, they could connect because Watkins can certainly run by both Byron Maxwell and Eric Rowe, but those are not routine simple throws. But they will take those shots. The main thing is McCoy, and McCoy not only as a runner but as a receiver, 21 targets in the last 4 weeks. That's very important. And Charles Clay has been very up and down in his usage, which is not a function of Charles Clay. It's a function of their very limited pass game.
You know, it's kind of a shame. I thought Watkins was going to be a little bit more of a run after the catch guy, too. You know,
well, they don't throw him those kinds of balls.
I know. That's what I'm saying. You know,
it's not his fault.
It's feast or famine right now with him.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, because I thought he could, you know, he was a number one pick, a high pick, and they traded up for him, complete type of receiver, can do it all. Right now his game is kind of limited to that. If he doesn't connect, as we said, it's a little problematic. He's not going to get the volume, that's for sure. Any thoughts on McCoy against Philly's defense as it stands right now? How is Philly going to
Yeah, their run defense has not been quite as good over the last month as it was early in the season when it was in some ways a shutdown run defense, and it's not been as good. I think the linebacker issues have hurt that. I mean, Jordan Hicks was probably their best linebacker this year. He's been out now.
Yeah.
So it's not been as strong, and there's no question that Buffalo will run the ball. Now, do you have to factor Taylor into the run game? He poses problems not only when he has the ball, but when he doesn't have the ball, because you have to contain him. So it's a good run game. It's a tough run game to defend.
Yeah, and Taylor's pretty good in terms of eyes in the back of his head, and he's not easy to sack. He doesn't turn it over all that much. So, you know, I'm sure they like that about him. And you mentioned Eric Rowe. Worth noting that Eric Rowe's line of the field is the same side, the left side of the offense, that Mr. Watkins normally lines up in. So he could see a good amount of the rookie Eric Rowe unless they change things up there. But certainly a beatable matchup right now for Sammy Watkins. And I think we need to roll with him because he's kind of hot right now the last 2 weeks. Tennessee at the Jets. And we know the personnel here for the Titans. We know they do some creative things in terms of blitzing with Dick LeBeau and Ray Horton. I would think Ryan Fitzpatrick can handle that. He's kind of seen it all at this point. And ultimately, if they don't disrupt the passing attack and get to Fitz and throw him off kilter, I mean, I don't see how they don't have more success throwing it to Marshall and Decker. Decker doing a lot of great work out of the slot because look, they've been playing at a very high level. This matchup is very good. And, you know, Fitzpatrick has just been much more consistent this year.
Well, that's true, and clearly Decker in the slot has been where he's done most of his work, and that's a concern, because right now I think Tennessee struggles a bit. They bring sensible plays over the slot, and that's what he'll do. They've been playing Webb outside. They basically benched Bleedy Ray Wilson last week, and B.W. Webb, has been playing outside. So this is a defense, I think, that the secondary is probably its weak link. I think they've done actually a pretty good job with pressure concepts, and the Jets will try to run the ball. And Tennessee's been, you know, a little up and down, but there have been times when their run defense has been very, very good this season, as you know.
Absolutely. No, they've really done well defensively, and their run defense has been holding running backs under 4 yards a carry pretty much all year.
Yep.
In fact, let me see where they are now because I'm curious to see exactly where they are. There you go, 3.7 yards a carry the last 4 weeks. So they have been sub four in terms of giving up rushing yards and per carry averages to running backs. So it's, by the way, not a great matchup there for Chris Ivory, who to me is a week-to-week proposition at this point. If he scores, great. If he doesn't, he could hurt you. Got some catches last week. Now you got Bilal Powell in the mix there, and he's serviceable for sure as a receiver out of the backfield. For Tennessee, you know, Marcus Mariota, it's a week-to-week proposition. That's the problem I have with him because you just don't know. It's not a very good passing game. You know, these slot receivers aren't doing all that much. Dorial Green-Beckham, hey, that's great. Came through. Don't know if we trust him. But talk about what you're seeing on tape from Delanie Walker lately because he is like one of the more – he's like one of the 10 most consistent fantasy players in the league this year, Delanie Walker.
Well, I think what you're seeing with him is he's essentially being used as a hybrid tight end wide receiver. This is a team that lines up in a lot of 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends, and Walker has become a player who lines up all over the formation, not just in conventional tight end positions. He runs wide receiver routes, and he's clearly the number one receiver for Marcus Mariota. And I think Mariota actually played his best game of the season last week, and not because he ran 87 yards for a touchdown. He was really, really good in the pocket, and he's been growing in that area week to week. But Walker is their most interesting receiver at this point in the way that he's utilized.
We talk about it a lot with these running quarterbacks. Like, it would be awesome if you just tried to win from the pocket as a traditional quarterback. And, oh, by the way, in my back pocket, just in case I need it, I could run for like a 75-yard touchdown. I mean, it's nice in theory, but these guys who can do that typically lean a little bit more on the run. Yet that's not the case with Marcus Mariota this year, really.
No, it's not, and that's why one reason I think that he has a really, really bright future, because he is not a runner. He can run, but he's not a runner, and there's a big difference.
Absolutely. What about the Jet D? I don't know what they are either, honestly. I mean, the injuries are really destroyed. I don't think they're going to – well, let's say it's still Thursday morning, so – it's not looking great for Darrell Revis. He hasn't been cleared yet. Cromartie banged up. Marcus Williams, the backup, banged up for Revis. These guys were all – well, Williams and Revis were all out last week. What is this defense? I mean, they're good against the run. Are they still beatable on the back end against the pass?
Yeah, I think they are. And I think that, you know, I don't know how much stock you put in numbers, but, I mean, Mariota's been terrific on the road. I mean, he's thrown touchdowns with no interceptions on the road this year, which I don't know what that means, but it's just a reality. And I think he's a calm guy, and I don't think he'll be intimidated at all by playing at MetLife. So, you know, I think the Titans could move the ball in this game. The issue for the Titans is they can't run it, you know, with any consistency. So that's one reason their offense has been so uneven, because they really do not have a run game.
True. If you feel like if he had a Marshawn Lynch like Russell Wilson had earlier in his career, that Mariota would be a lot more deadly because he has nothing to lean on. They will get, for what it's worth, Dexter McCluster back. He does give him a little bit of pop in that
juice. Yep.
Yeah. Let's go to Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, and the Bengals are a little bit banged up here on the back end. Leon Hall, iffy to play. Pac-Man Jones, iffy to play. And Dre Kirkpatrick has been limited as well. Let's say they're down one or two DBs. What is the fallout here against
that
Pittsburgh?
That won't change the way they play, John, because what they're going to do is they're going to play the run with seven. They're going to be creative with some pressures. They're going to play predominantly out of a two-deep shell, and they're going to disguise their coverages. That's what they're going to do. You and I could be playing corner, and that's what they would do. Now, obviously, are there points in games where you do get one-on-one matchups, even if you're playing predominant zone? Sure there are. But that's the approach they're going to take.
Which could, to me, mean that, you know, this could be a little bit of a D'Angelo Williams game if they're going
They're going to play out of a two-shell most of the time. You know, I think when they disguise, they'll do other things, but I think their foundation will be two-shell, split safeties, and they're going to try to stop the run with seven, and that means that you hand the ball to D'Angelo Williams. And, you know, if you're Pittsburgh and you see that, then you're saying on your sideline, we have to be able to run the ball. There's seven in the box. So it works both ways.
Yeah, and certainly they can run it with D'Angelo. I mean, they can give him 25 carries. He can run for 150 yards. I mean, he still looks very, very good. And speaking of very good, you know, how well is Big Ben playing right now? I mean, is this
as you know, they played Week 8, and that was his first game back. Since that game, four games, he's averaged 383 yards passing per game, which I know you know from doing all the numbers, but playing really, really well. Another team like Arizona, they push it down the field. They do it differently. They're not as route concept based as they are sort of one-on-one based, you know, creating one-on-one matchups. They're good at that. You know, obviously they get Bryant matched up on the perimeter, and they send him deep a number of times, and it seems like they connect once a week. So that's why I think Cincinnati is going to try to prevent as much as they can those one-on-one matchups.
Yeah, and the Bengals have been very good against the run. They haven't given up a rushing touchdown or a running back, I think, in like 5-6 weeks. But, you know, D'Angelo is very capable, and I like that angle there of this being a D'Angelo Williams game. There goes my bat phone again. Let's talk about the Bengal offense against Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh, to me, you know, they've been good against the run all year. And to me, what's kind of helped them and saved them and made them respectable is, you know their pass rush and their blitzing. If you're Cincinnati, I'm sure you're looking for balance. But if you look at the Bengal offense, how should they attack? I mean, obviously a balanced approach, but I would think you would go after the secondary if at all possible. A.J. Green has really hurt them, and I think the Steelers are vulnerable against the tight end, and it looks like they're going to get Tyler Eifert back.
I think Pittsburgh's whole MO has to be trying to pressure, because they can't line up with a four-man rush and play coverage against this group. They're not good enough on the back end, and Cincinnati's too good with their weapons. So it comes down to pressure schemes, and they did a really good job of that when they played Week 8. Now, obviously, the Bengals have that on tape. The Steelers won't do the exact same things. No one does that in division games. But their focus, John, still has to be pressure. It can't be coverage, or they're not going to hold up.
And might that be, You're looking for an outlet receiver, like might that be a Giovanni Bernard game?
Well, the only way that it's not Gio Bernard is if their pressure schemes force Bernard to be a blocker. That's what they did last game.
Right. Yeah, he didn't do much. Neither did
Dalton. No, because they forced him to stay in the backfield. In fact, there were plays where Bernard was split, and Dalton called him back into the backfield as a pass protector because he saw the front and he knew that he couldn't protect.
Yeah, it's tough. It's an ultimate chess match here between these coaches. They're going up against each other as the players are. So, in-game performance and how things shake out has a lot to do with, what we see on the field here and the production. So it's a tougher call. But these two teams are pretty loaded with fantasy assets, and I would think most people just, kind of use them, just roll with it. Jeremy Hill didn't do much in that first matchup. He is coming off a really solid game. It is December, and it seems like they're right about ready to trend toward, leaning on him a little bit more. Gio has not been a factor the last couple of weeks. New England at Houston. And based on the current state of the Patriot offensive line and offense, how problematic is this matchup against Romeo Crennel's Texans?
Well, I think what started to happen, and I think it's a domino effect. Look, it's always – there's many elements to a pass game. We know Tom Brady's a great quarterback. That's not even worth the conversation. But what started to happen is they've lost Edelman. Big factor in the way they play, okay? Gronk has not been there now for a game, a little more than a game and a quarter, whatever it is. So the two guys who best understand this offense and how to get open quickly and present themselves to Brady are not there. So now, because that's not happening, and this offense is a repetitive timing execution offense, not a my guy's better than you offense, is that the O-line deficiencies are piling up a little bit. And it's been a little problematic in the last 2-3 weeks. And receivers, you can tell that there's not a comfort level for Brady, because how many times, John, did you see Brady drop back against the Eagles and actually have time on a number of plays and not throw the ball? And then the pressure got to him. And because it's Brady and not a young quarterback who doesn't know what he's seeing, because it's Brady, it's a function of he had nowhere to throw it, not that he didn't know where to throw it. So you're seeing it's all kind of working together now.
Yeah, I would imagine he'll lean a little bit and lean on Amendola for one, because that's the guy who's been there the longest. You got Scott Chandler, who I know you thought would be a little bit more of a factor last week.
I thought he would be this past week, and he wasn't.
I really thought James White looked outstanding catching the ball out of the backfield. And I brought up the Kevin Falk comparison.
Was a really good analogy, and he may not be there yet, but I could see him evolving over time into that kind of player for Bill Belichick.
Not exactly what Deion Lewis is, but your classic third down back, basically.
Not explosive like Deion Lewis, but Kevin Falk was not explosive. He was just really consistent.
Right. And not a guy you could line up a lot on the outside and all that,
right.
and really that versatile. But yeah, I kind of saw that. Now, a lot of that was late in the game. He got 10 catches, but I thought he looked pretty damn good receiving the ball. I thought he looked quicker than ever, which tells me he must be understanding what the hell he's doing out there. So I think he could be a real factor for the rest of the season. And for the Texans, you got to think Bill Belichick's going to sell out to stop Hopkins. I mean, what else is there? How do you think they're going to play DeAndre? I know it's a tough call, but for what it's worth, it's out there.
I keep going back and forth on this. I think Hopkins, with his size not being too big, is the kind of receiver they'd feel comfortable with Butler on. But on the other hand, a part of me then says, why not put Butler on and Nate Washington, take him out of the game, and double Hopkins more often than not, depending on all those things that go into when you double. So I waver on that. So I'm not sure, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I would guess the double. Yeah, because Hopkins, if he's singled up, I mean, against anyone, he can kill him. I mean, look what he did to Revis. I know Revis is
right
toward the end of his career and all that. So maybe this works out for those wondering in fantasy. Maybe this works out as a Cecil Shorts game. He does get targets. He had double-digit targets last week, and he does line up in the slot quite a bit. Ryan Griffin scored, but that was a little bit of a fluky play. Let's move on to Indianapolis at Jacksonville and the Colts. we kind of talked about it. It seems as if, you know, Matt Hasselbeck's deficiency is kind of more and more prevalent the larger the sample size. You know, this O-line, Greg, is not very good in Indy, too. Frank Gore was running well earlier in the year, and now all of a sudden he's sub 4.0. So, you know, they have some issues here offensively, but, you know, it is the Jaguars. They're hot, not a, you know, dominant defense by any stretch, and there are some vulnerabilities on the back end for the Jags.
Yes, there are. And
well, they may not have Puzzlewski, Greg. So
did he not practice yesterday? Is he definitely out?
He didn't practice. Him and Dan Scuda.
Okay, well, if Puzzlewski doesn't play, then you're taking a guy out who plays every single snap for them. Okay, he plays obviously in the base and he plays in the nickel, and he's a really good player in terms of understanding their defense. So that's a loss. You know, I think Jacksonville's defense, to me, it's one of those defenses. It's not a bad defense, but there's no defining feature to it. You know, there's no, hey, they've got a really good pass rush. Hey, they can shut down this guy. It's just kind of a solid defense that, you know, plays week to week depending on the opponent. But I think what you said about Hasselbeck is true. And he's a really solid player, but I think there are times where he can struggle because he's obviously not a great thrower at this point in his career, and their O-line is an issue. And that, to me, it's been a fairly big issue for the last number of years.
And for the Jags, you know, a couple of name-type players who do play, Jarrell Freeman and DeQuell Jackson may not play. Also, Anthony Costanzo did not practice on Wednesday, and that's part of the O-line.
Well, that's a concern at linebacker, to be honest with you, because Nate Irving played last week, and he's now out. So they could be really depleted at their inside stacked linebacker position, and that could be a little bit of an issue.
Yeah, and, you know, they are a passing team, but when they do run it with T.J. Yeldon, he continues to look good, and they're using him in the passing attack. Also, it could be a little bit of a Julius Thomas game as well. But, you know, again, how impressed are you this year with Allen Robinson? I mean, this kid, did you think he'd be this good coming out of Penn State?
I wasn't sure he'd be the kind of receiver that you could line up at XISO and he'd win one-on-one matchup. So when I say win, he's not winning by creating separation. He's winning with a lot of contested 50-50 balls, but that's part of the league now. That's what happens when you line up a guy at XISO to the short side of the field where he's the only receiver to that side of the field. And normally that receiver's not double-teamed. He's certainly not double-teamed if it's a throw outside the numbers. So Robinson's made a lot of catches like that, and he's clearly their number one receiver.
Pretty good matchup here overall for the Jaguars, especially T.J. Yeldon. Let's move on to San Diego at Kansas City. And earlier this year,
I got nothing on San Diego, John. I got nothing. I
mean, well, they have nothing.
I'm just being honest. I'm being honest.
Yeah. Well, we know. We just look at the current state of the team. And the opponent in the recent history, 3 weeks ago, they did nothing. The Chargers got completely shut down.
Right.
And we were just talking about it. Somebody on ESPN, I think it was Jim Trotter, made a great point about Melvin Gordon, who was playing at Wisconsin with a fullback and, you know, the quarterback under center. And Phillip Rivers is in the shotgun a bit, which that could be part of the problem with
could
Melvin
be.
Gordon. You know, but also this O-line's banged up still. And I don't know who the heck they're going to have, you know, the throw to, because Dontrell Inman and Stevie Johnson are up here. So,
yeah, I mean, yeah, you know.
Maybe a little Danny Woodhead, but even he's kind of disappeared here. And the tight ends have done nothing against this defense. So it's kind of a scary matchup here for the Chargers and for the Chiefs. Again, we know what they do. I mean, this is what they do. They run the football. They're conservative, but they do take some shots here and there. And Macklin playing well, and you know this is what they are. And I kind of get the feeling that they're going to kind of do at least fairly well, given their identity and given their approach, pretty much every week because Alex Smith is so consistent.
you know, it's funny. And I've done the same thing over the years. We talk about Alex Smith and his limitations, and they exist. Okay, obviously he's not going to make the kinds of throws that other quarterbacks make. Number one, he doesn't choose to attempt them, and number two, there's a question as to whether he could make them. But the reality is, he plays the same way almost every week. You know, going into this year, his last two seasons, I know he had 41 touchdowns and 13 picks. So this year he's thrown three picks. So basically in his last, you know, 46 games, something like that now, he's thrown 16 interceptions. You know, that's how you stay in games. And he's on a team that, obviously, Charles is out this year, but for the most part has a solid run game, with Charles a dynamic run game, and a very good defense. So it's a team. They play complementary football, which is so important in the NFL.
I would guess it could be a Travis Kelce game because the Chargers have struggled against that position all year, even with Eric Weddle in there. And you do have Jason Verrett likely on Jeremy Maclin, and Brandon Flowers is out.
I don't envy you, John, when it comes to someone like Travis Kelce, because he's so talented. And if he was on a different kind of team, and it's not his fault, you know, you could pencil him in for, you know, 12 targets every week and 7-8 catches. And, you know, but obviously on the team on which he's on, that doesn't work out that way on a weekly basis.
Yeah, and guess what?
But it could happen any week. I mean, any week he could go 7 for 110, you know, and then that's a big week.
As listeners of this podcast and people on fantasyguru.com know, I've been a huge Kelce fan from before he even broke out. The offseason of 2014, I was all over it. And look, it is what it is. I'm going to back a young, ascending stud talent every time. So it didn't really work out this year, but it is what it is. You would think, though, he'd be a little bit better with a very, very capable quarterback, but this is what it is. So we accept it. I mean, the kid is good, though, really good. Washington at Chicago. Any thoughts on the current Redskin offense against these Bears and Vic Fangio's defense?
I was really disappointed in the Redskins' offense on Monday night. I mean, I think Dallas has a good defense and a challenging defense. I would say the Bears' defense is really good because of Vic, but they're not quite as challenging across the board. You know, the Redskins do have weapons. The one thing that's been totally inconsistent is an inability to run the ball. You know, there was a lot of talk about Cousins. He's, you know, evolving and getting better and better, and you know, I thought the game Monday night he was just okay, and I still think he's a guy you're not certain as to exactly what he is. He's not a great talent, so he has to play with great efficiency almost all the time. And you know, I think Vic Fangio is such a good schemer that I think this is a difficult matchup for the Redskins. I really do. I would not expect them to have a big offensive day.
My question is, who on the Bears is going to slow down Jordan Reed? I do feel like this is a Jordan Reed game. You know, Antrell Roll, I don't know about that. you know, that's a fair question, though. Who on the Bears is going to stop the athletic and match up the athletic Jordan Reed?
You know, again, I don't know if they have that one specific matchup. I don't know whether they'll match up, you know, Adrian Amos on him. It would not match up Kurt Pazinski on him. He'll be the deep safety. So it's possible Amos could play him. I don't know whether they'll feel comfortable with a linebacker on him. The interesting thing is who will match up to him if he goes out to X-ISO as the single receiver. So the Bears do have some concerns here, but I think that overall, I think they'll do a good job against this offense. I really do.
Are you surprised based on the success early on? It looked like early on, like, you know, they use a number one pick on an offensive lineman, a grinder, a road grader, and they're going to be power running. And is it the O-line? Has that just kind of fallen flat, or is it just that they don't have good enough backs? Because, as you mentioned, their running attack is just
I mean, usually the run game is a combination of many things. It's always easy to say it's bad O-line play. When you watch them, it's easy to see there's not a lot of holes to run through. I think they have certain kinds of backs. They don't have creative backs. They have straight-ahead backs. So I don't think that the style of back helps an O-line that is not necessarily moving people on a consistent basis. I think they have backs that are straight, kind of straight line guys.
Any thoughts on the Bears' offense against Washington? I mean, I think this pass rush is coming on a little bit. I feel like the Redskins are playing better football on the defensive side of the ball. Meanwhile, Jay Cutler has been struggling the last 3 weeks and a lack of weaponry. No Martellus Bennett in this game. I don't know if he's going to get Marquise Wilson. Is it Redskin D getting a little bit better? I'm not sure how much you've seen of them on tape.
The Redskin D, I've seen a lot of them on tape. And again, I think they've become a sort of a solid defense that's not a high pressure defense, and they don't get a lot of pressure even with just four. But I think they've mixed and matched really well in the secondary. D'Angelo Hall has kind of morphed into a safety. I really like this kid Jarrett, who's a rookie from Virginia Tech. So I think they've mixed and matched a lot of pieces together that you wouldn't have expected, and I think that's coaching. That's what you do throughout a season when you have a lot of injuries and you've got to find out how you can get your best guys out there in the best positions, and I think they've done that pretty well.
At least they don't blitz, so that could give Cutler a little bit of a chance to make some plays from the pocket. Atlanta at Carolina. We know what Carolina does every week. They impose their will in terms of their running game with it, of course, and with Cam, and it's diverse, and then they take their shots. And they, you know, of course, it's Greg Olsen. And we also kind of know what Atlanta does. I mean, they're a pretty basic defense. They line up and they play. How difficult of a matchup is Cam and the Panthers for this current Falcon defense?
I would say it's not a real tough matchup. I mean, you know, when you look at it just from a tape standpoint, you know, we know every game's different, but from a tape standpoint, I would say that this Falcon defense is not a difficult matchup at all. They use more personnel than any team in the league. They literally have two separate D lines for their base and their nickel. They change safeties. They change linebackers. I mean, they have a totally different personnel in their base and their sub packages almost. So they don't rush the quarterback really well. The rookie Beasley has not developed yet as a pass rusher, so they don't really have a pass rush.
And for the Atlanta Falcon offense, it's hard to envision much success. Carolina has been lights out against the run. They're giving up like 2.8 yards a carry. Obviously, the Josh Norman factor likely shadowing Julio Jones as much as possible.
And I think he might in this game. We talked about it last night, and I've thought about it some more. And I think that he might do that because, you know, one reason I think he might not have traveled as much with Cooks is Cooks is a different kind of receiver. You know, he's sort of the shorter, quicker guy. Norman is tall, angular. You know, I think a Julio Jones, is a better matchup for Norman. And it would not surprise me to see him match up more than he did with Cooks. He really didn't match up to Cooks very much at all last week.
So what you have to look for in the fantasy world is when you see a situation like that, you're like, okay, who benefits from this if Julio is going to be contained by a really good corner who's playing very well? And I got to look at Jacob Tammy and my man Roddy White. I know Roddy has not had a great year here, but I wouldn't be shocked at all if he did something in this game, especially with we'll see about Peanut Tillman if he can play. They are a little bit iffy there, and they did sign Cortland Finnegan, who does seem like
he played a lot of snaps last week, John, and actually played pretty well.
He fits in beautifully. I can see him.
They need a slot corner. They need a slot. Yeah. I mean, without Tillman, they need a slot corner. Now, I don't know Tillman's status, but they need a slot corner when Tillman's not on the field.
Tillman was limited yesterday, so maybe that's a good sign. Let's move over.
That's okay. I'm limited every day, John, so that's okay.
Absolutely. I'm extremely limited. New Orleans at Tampa Bay. And, you know, let's talk about Delvin Bro because he didn't practice early in the week. He was knocked out of the game last week. I know the Saints have been a little bit better with Dennis Allen, but if Delvin Bro is out, I feel like he's kind of like the heart of their defense, especially in their secondary. I mean, how huge of a loss, you know, just thinking about stepping back with if Delvin Bro is inactive this week.
I think he's a big factor. I think he's been one of the best corners overall you know, in the league, an unknown player. The Saints have certainly not had a good season, but I think he's been a really good corner. He's played a lot of tough man coverage against good receivers. You know, I think that impacts him. That means Brandon Dixon likely lines up on the outside. And, you know, I think this Buck offense, it's in some ways a very traditional NFL offense. A lot of running the ball out of base personnel, 6-0 line, a pass game that has sort of old school, deep crossers, deep comebacks, skinny posts, you know, play action. It's really an old school NFL offense.
You think that's catered to the personnel, having those two huge receivers on the outside?
I think it's probably catered more to the O-line and the quarterback.
Gotcha. Doug Martin's still looking good. I mean, to
yes,
me,
he is.
He looks just as fresh as he looked.
I mean, they ran the ball on the first six plays of the game this week, and all out of base personnel and all different runs. I mean, Doug Martin is the way they start their offense.
Do you think this Buck defense is actually now above average?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Really playing well. Not
they
bad.
Are.
Then you have Drew Brees and the Saints not going to have Mark Ingram, Greg. This is amazing. Now, a lot of people in the fantasy world want to know who the back is to get. I would almost argue neither. But, you know, Tim Hightower is probably going to be the guy who's got the best chance here. I do still give the slight edge for those wondering. And it's slight to Spiller if you're in a PPR league. But, you know, that's a leap of faith because he's been worthless this year. And Hightower, of course, he hasn't done much in 3 years. Hightower is going to be their lead runner for now. Against Tampa, and they've been very good against the run, so I would not expect much this week. Detroit at St. Louis, we can move on. It's going to be Case Keenum, Greg, for the Rams, so does that give them a chance compared to Nick Foles?
Their pass game has been terrible. Foles has played very poorly this year, a big surprise to many, I'm sure. Certainly the Rams, who signed him to a longer-term deal. You know, defensively, I think that they're starting to struggle a little bit. Quinn is out for the year. McDonald's out for the year. The loss of McDonald, I thought, was pretty noticeable last week against the Cards. Now, obviously, the Cards are a team that can exploit all that. But, yeah, they're a team that's really struggling, a team that we thought their defense would be potentially dominant and hasn't quite worked out that way.
A lot of people are just really worried about Todd Gurley, and they may look at this matchup saying, oh, okay, we're good to go, but – I would say I'm very concerned still. I think Detroit they don't really have a weakness on defense. They're pretty good against the run here, so I'm not sure Todd Gurley gets off in this one, Greg.
I would agree with you.
And they're giving up 2.5 yards a carry, by the way, to running backs the last 4 weeks, so I'm concerned there with Todd Gurley. Detroit offensively, as you mentioned there, the Ram D is they're losing guys. I mean, they are clearly losing guys. And they've been much less effective. So a decent matchup there. San Fran at Cleveland. You watch the tape. You're obsessed with Blaine Gabbert. It's the first thing you do on Monday morning. Gotta see Gabbert. Is he leveling off from the first couple of games?
Yeah, I thought that it kind of started the week before. I think you started to see just elements of him getting a little shaky in the pocket creeping in. I thought that was the case this week. Now, again, it's not a good O-line, but it wasn't a good O-line in his first two starts, too, when he was a lot firmer in the pocket. So, I obviously, he ran this week, but that's not the way that he can play in this league, and no one can play and be consistent that way in the NFL. So, I thought that, you know, they have multiple pass game problems, John, as you know. Their O-line's not very good in pass protection. Their receivers either can't win versus man or are poor route runners. Gabbert is starting now to get a little shaky. He's starting to anticipate and perceive the pressure just a little bit. We'll see if that continues.
That said, Joe Hayden is not going to play. And, boy, this Brown D, Greg, is a mess. They are a
Yeah,
mess.
Yeah. But I still don't think the 49ers are an offense that is going to explode, John. Again, I'm not saying they're going to be shut down, but they're not. This is not an offense that's going to put up 450 yards.
Do you have any thoughts on Sean Braun? He's the guy.
I think he would have a chance in this league as a nice complimentary back, a nice number two back. You know, I think he has a skill set that's maybe a notch below, but similar to a Jeremy Langford type back, you know, a nice sort of complimentary back who can run and catch. But, you know, now he's their feature guy.
Browns, it's questionable if they'll have Travis Benjamin. He didn't practice early in the week, so that's a problem because they are very, very thin. Taylor Gabriel, Andrew Hawk, I mean, it literally could be all Gary Barnage and Brian Hartline. But you've seen this 49er D a lot. Any thoughts on that matchup with Johnny Manziel?
Well, you know, with Manziel, you're concerned mostly about one thing, his ability to make plays outside of structure. You're probably going to feel pretty comfortable believing that he's not going to beat you with a methodical precision performance. So you're concerned about the outside of structure plays, and obviously you have to take that into account in your game planning. You can't just rush him with abandon. You're going to have to try to keep him contained within the parameters of the pocket and force him to make throws. And, you know, when he last played against Pittsburgh, he made a couple, and there was some positive signs. You're going to need to find out how much he can do that. Now, I think this game's going to be a close game, John. I mean, this is a game where, an improvisational out-of-structure play by a Manziel could be the difference in a game like this, because I don't believe the 49ers offensively are going to run away and hide. I mean, I think this could be a close game in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, sure. And if Benjamin does go, these young corners have been burned at times. So that's a critical storyline here if Benjamin is his status, basically. Let's move on to Oakland at Denver. And these teams met earlier this year, Greg. I mean, I feel like that was Derek Carr's worst game of the season. He threw some picks here, didn't he? Actually, only one.
He threw three picks.
Oh, okay. What am I looking at then?
He threw three picks. He wasn't as sharp in this game. He wasn't as sharp mentally, and he made some poor decisions. You know, but I don't view this as a trend. You know, I think he's a young quarterback. He had a bad game for him. So I wouldn't, you know, I know you often ask me, because that's what you do in fantasy, is you're trying to find out if there's trends developing. I don't see this as a trend.
No. And certainly it is a challenging matchup, no question about it. I mean, the O-line isn't great. Denver's really good against the run, so we're not going to likely see a lot of success. Latavius Murray was completely shut down in that game. So maybe Clive Walford would be a guy who can be a bailout type of a guy, because that's where Denver's been their weakest against the tight end this year.
Well,
in the safety
position. I will say this. I don't believe that Oakland will play the game, though, with the idea that, oh, we're playing against a good defense and we have to be careful. I think they're an aggressive offense, and I think they'll continue to be an aggressive offense. That's the way they were when they played Denver the first time. They're not going to cut back on what they do. They're going to, you know, they're going to believe that we have good players and a good system, and we're going to run our offense.
Yeah, they're just not going to likely be as successful with these good players on the other side. And for Denver, and it's a tough one because we don't know about CJ Anderson, but you know, you kind of look at this, you step back, and it looks like it's, well, it's Kubiak's offense, but you know, I feel like Brock Osweiler is more of an accessory in the offense as opposed to like the guy.
I would agree. And no matter who plays running back, they're going to run the same plays. So, you know, it's not like they're going to change their offense based on who lines up behind Osweiler. They're going to run the same offensive plays no matter what.
Bunch of guys in the injury report for both of these teams, too, by the way. We just don't know. It's a little early in the week here. You got the Trevathan. You've got, C.J. Anderson, of course. Hillman also on the injury report. So we'll see. It's certainly, we all know it's a tougher matchup for the Raiders, and probably a beatable matchup for the Broncos. Let's go to Dallas at Green Bay. And, Greg, I would argue that this could be like one of the five worst matchups for the Packers in terms of the receivers on the outside. I mean, is that hyperbole?
Could be. Well, no, because they're going to see a lot of man coverage and good man coverage, which is what the Cowboys play, and they're tough. And, look, Aaron Rodgers in the last, is it 4 weeks or 5 weeks, he's only completing about 55% of his passes. Career-wise, he's been at 66%. And, you know, the best thing you could say about their pass game over the last 4 or 5 weeks is the screen game. I mean, they've not really had much success. You know, they found a matchup last week they liked with Richard Rodgers, who was matched up either against a linebacker or against the safety Abdul Cuttis. But for the most part, there's not been a lot of structure to this pass game. You know, a lot of design. Now, obviously, every team has design, but theirs is not working right now. So the screen game has been the number one element to their pass game.
Plus the old Eddie Lacy fiasco last week.
Yep.
Do you think Richard Rodgers can continue to be a factor, though? I do feel like he offers some support, a big body in the middle of the field with these guys on the outside not getting open and with Randall Cobb not creating much separation and not making many plays.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's – I remember when he came out of college, I thought he had your classic skill set for a receiving tight end. Not quite Jordan Reed, but that kind of player in the NFL. And I think that, yes, he can be a matchup player.
Dez Bryant is killing people, and I feel like Matt Castle's kind of holding him back and is not pulling the trigger on maybe some riskier type of throws and just trying to, you know, again, for lack of a better term, just throw it up to Dez, let him be an athlete. But, you know, Dom
Capers. Well, Castle's not that kind of quarterback. Castle's not a throw-it-up kind of quarterback. Castle is a very by-the-book quarterback, and he's always been that way. And when the system really works effectively for him, as it did when he started that year in New England, he can be an effective player. When the system doesn't exactly work out the way, you know, it's supposed to, which is rare in this league for the most part, or it doesn't happen that often, let's put it that way, then I think he struggles a bit, and that's what you're seeing now.
Yep, that really explains a lot with Matt Castle. It makes a lot of sense. That's how some weeks he looks really good. You're like, wow, this guy's not bad. Then the next week he looks like, wow, this guy should be out of the league.
And there's so many degrees of a system work. I don't want people to think I'm just talking that the game becomes random. You know, it doesn't become random. You know, when I say it doesn't work, I mean, that involves going through progressions, too. I mean, you know, and I'm not sure that he does that really effectively.
Another good game for Russell Wilson last week at Seattle at Baltimore. I mean, it's like a flip of the switch the last 3 weeks. All of a sudden, he's like Montana. You know, he's like winning from
throwing from the pocket. He's really good from the pocket. There's a sense of timing, rhythm, anticipation. He's ripping the ball. I mean, he's throwing with confidence because the ball's coming out beautifully. And this pass game looks different. Is it Jimmy Clausen who's going to go this week, by the way?
No, I think the expectation, or at least the hope, is that Schaub is going to be able to get out there. But anyway, it's iffy.
Well, let's hope so.
Yeah.
For the Ravens' sake.
I know. And, you know, Javorius Allen, Buck Allen, going to get as many touches as possible. And, you know, they're banged up a tight end here. It's brutal. It's pretty brutal here for the Ravens against Seattle. And they're obviously very strong defensively. So, we don't, you know, don't expect much, basically. Javorius at least can get some catches, 5, 6, 7, 8, if it's Matt Schaub. But if it's Jimmy Clausen, head to the hills. The Giants at the Dolphins. Greg, I think this could be a little bit of a shootout here. I know the Dolphins want to run the football here with Lamar Miller and Ryan Tannehill, but you know, both defenses and pass defenses are suspect, highly suspect. Any thoughts here on how this one may play out? I mean, obviously these defenses are easy to throw the football off.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the Giants are. This is going to be an interesting game to see what Miami does on offense. You know, who knows? Maybe it's finally a Devontae Parker game, who's certainly been used a lot more the last couple of weeks. He's going to start this week. I think he'll have some opportunities down the field. I think they have to try to exploit that. On the other side of the ball, you know, I think the Giants' offense is in some ways the same every week. They throw it effectively. They don't really have a running back that they can count on. They're limited now at tight end, and Danell's done for the season. But I think both teams will have to throw the ball in this game to move it with any kind of efficiency, and it could be. And it wouldn't surprise me to see this game get into the high 20s.
Yeah, Will Tye for the Giants, a tight end, is actually viable because, boy, Reuben Randall's terrible. Hakeem Nicks not doing much. and all that. It's a shame because Eli's playing pretty well all year, just doesn't have a lot of weapons outside of Odell Beckham Jr. And for Miami, I do think it's going to be a Parker game. Why wouldn't you test the shaky safeties there for the Giants and their corners with their number one pick is coming on here? So there it is, Week 14 in a nutshell. Courtesy of Mr. Greg Cosell and yours truly here at FantasyGuru.com. Greg, we appreciate it. That's a wrap. Good luck to everybody out there in Week 14. We'll talk to you next week.